the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto-related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
It seems the banks are getting behind stablecoins in a big way. Absa set up a digital asset team 3.5 years ago to explore how digital assets and blockchain could benefit its banking business. It's not hard to see why. Stablecoins are transacted on the blockchain with near instant settlements. The costs are low, and there's an ability to move funds anywhere in the world 24/7, even outside banking hours. In November last year, New York-listed Supergroup, owner of the gambling platform Betway, not to be confused with the JSE-listed Supergroup, they announced the launch of a Rand peg stablecoin called ZAR Supercoin, with Absa being responsible for custody of the reserves backing this new coin. So we now have multiple Rand stablecoins, and it looks like Absa is piloting one of its own. It's clear there are going to be many more ZAR stablecoins in the future. And that poses the question, why are there so many Rand stablecoins needed? What's their use? And what does the future of banking look like? Well, to explore this, we're joined by Rob Downes, Head of Digital Assets at Absa. Hi, Rob. Thank you very much for joining us. A few years ago, the banks in South Africa seemed quite dismissive of crypto. And that's certainly not the case today. So maybe bring us up to speed on what Absa is doing in the stablecoin space. You've got a lot going on.
Yeah, we have. Hi, Kieran. Good to be here. Thanks for the invitation. Yeah, we started a few years ago as part of a project run by the South African Reserve Bank, Project COCA. And we were really looking at how stablecoins could help cross-border payments. And this led us actually to building our own stablecoin on a private permission blockchain. We actually didn't back that with Rand. We actually backed ours with gold, and we'll see how that plays out as we start testing it with clients. Our intention is that we start running some tests later this year on our stablecoin. I think it's very clear that stablecoins are being used for cross-border payments every day. But one of the things we're really keen to explore as part of our testing is how we ensure that through using stablecoins, we're still able to provide the Reserve Bank with balance of payment reporting, with financial surveillance reporting, just to see if this is something that will help, obviously, with the broader rollout of regulations and give the regulators some insights into how it could work. And I think they got a lot of that through Project COCA too, but we obviously want to test ours in production as opposed to some test environments, and we want to test with our clients. Above this, work on our own stablecoin. We've been engaging with some of the largest stablecoin issuers in the world on how we can work together to bring more access to Absa's clients. And this will be something we continue to work on through this year. I think what some of the things, and maybe we'll touch on this a little bit through the conversation, is obviously making sure that we are working within the regulatory framework. And we know that there's still some areas that the regulator, especially in South Africa, are looking at to make it a bit clearer around stablecoin regulation for cross-border payments, especially. As you mentioned in that intro, we are working with Supergroup on their Supercoin. Probably more of a natural role for a bank to play is providing a reserve account for the custody of the reserves that underpin the Rand stablecoin that they're issuing. So that's something that we did last year. And probably lastly, not directly related to stablecoins, but we are working on an initiative that SWIFT are running globally. SWIFT are looking at using a blockchain solution to enable cross-border payments. And there's, about 39 banks participating in that globally. So that's something else we're quite keen to pursue to see if SWIFT really has a role to play there and how the banks can work together to bring some of that into the African market too.
Tell us, what is the name of the stablecoin that you're developing? And is it in the pilot stage? This is just a test sort of sandbox type of idea at the moment, or is this something that you're planning to roll out in the pretty near future?
So, I mean, internally we call it Absacoin. It's something that at the moment we're only planning to use for transactions between Absa clients in the first instance. So our intention is that we're going to run a proof of concept on that this year with clients, hoping to do that in Q2 or Q3. We have one of our regulators, so we're working between the South African our South African business and our Kenyan business. We're still waiting for approval from the Kenyan regulator, so we've had approval from the regulators here locally. So once we get that approval, we're looking to run it, and it will be quite a small proof of concept, more about testing the reporting requirements and testing how it works on our blockchain. But we're looking forward to seeing how clients respond to that.
All right. Now, last year, Absa announced a deal with Ripple, which is a crypto infrastructure company. You've just informed me. I thought they were the issuer of the XRP token, but they are the largest holder of the XRP token. Now, that's an interesting one. I want you to go into that. But my understanding is that this allows Absa to integrate very secure institutional-grade digital custody tech into its banking operations. Anybody, there's been all these frightening stories about the security about digital assets. However, you know, if you look at banking operations in South Africa, you've been involved in custody of digital assets, fiat digital assets, for a long time, and you're pretty good at it.
Yeah.
So why is the Ripple deal so important?
Yeah, it is quite a big deal for us, very important for us. So we made a conscious choice as a bank. When we started this journey about 3 years ago, we looked at what was happening in the market, where we thought the market was going to go. And we made a conscious choice that if we're going to participate with digital assets, we want to make sure that we can provide safe and secure custody of digital assets, whether that's a bank-issued digital asset like our gold stablecoin, or whether that's a third-party-issued digital asset like the large market cap cryptos and stablecoins. So we started that as our kind of foundational layer, and we ended up working with and we partnered with Ripple to provide that. And our intention is that we'll offer that to our corporate and business clients here in South Africa in the not too distant future, and then look at how we can think about taking that out further. So I suppose our starting point was making sure that we could provide security. And it really ties in with our ethos of trying to, you know, be a full-service bank. You're absolutely right. We look after clients' fiat currency. We look after their traditional securities and provide custody of traditional securities. As the world moves more and more towards digital assets, we felt it was really important to offer that too. And obviously working with Ripple gives us access to their institutional-grade digital asset custody technology. And I think tying that crypto-native solution along with our traditional banking experience around controls and risk models and frameworks, we think it's probably going to be quite a powerful proposition for us and our clients.
Okay, Rob, explain for people who don't know stable coins, what is this process of minting and burning stable coins? You know, people, they are familiar with the rand and the dollar and so on, but stable coins, yeah. Slightly different breed of animal.
Sure. So, I mean, put simply, minting is the process to create a new coin and burning is the process to destroy those coins. So, I mean, we've been talking a little bit about RAND stable coins. If we were to use RAND as the example, new coins are created. So if you as a consumer, if you send 100 RAND to the issuer of the stable coin, they will bank that 100 RAND and put it in their reserve account with their bank or money market fund, wherever they keep their reserves. And they will issue 100 RAND in stablecoin to you, and they'll transfer that into your digital wallet, your crypto wallet. And the process to burn is essentially the reverse. You send back your stablecoins to the issuer, and they will send back the 100 RAND into your traditional bank account or wherever you receive that money. And really, the reason tokens are burnt is it's important for issuers that they keep supply of stablecoins exactly matching the amount that's in reserve. So as soon as money is deposited or withdrawn, they mint or burn appropriately.
Right. I mean, people might be interested to find out a little bit more about how these stablecoin issuers operate. If you take Tether, for example, which is the biggest USD stablecoin, also the most profitable company per employee in the world, certainly were last year, they made something like $13 billion. And people say, how on earth did that happen? Well, it comes down to what they're backing the coins with, right? So they're invested in U.S. yield-earning treasuries, and they've also got some Bitcoin, which, of course, did very well. Won't be looking so good this year, but explain from a banking point of view.
Yeah, so essentially they operate by 100% reserve backing. So if you take Tether or Circle or any of the other issuers or the local issuers, if they have, and I think Tether's latest numbers, $170, $180 billion worth of USDT in circulation, That means they have to have at least $180 billion worth of short-dated treasuries or cash in reserve or money market investments, basically, and this is independently audited. So there's an independent audit for companies in the world. They will go and check with the bank or with the custodian of those reserves to make sure that there is enough money in reserve, matching the supply of stable coins in the market. So that's the controls really that operate. And obviously stablecoin issuers, they will make they make money off those reserves. So you mentioned Tether's profits there. They primarily make returns because they get paid interest and returns on those investments. And that's how they make their money, because they don't pass on those returns necessarily to the holders of the token. And that's a fairly big, I guess, debate globally at the moment around stablecoins and whether issuers should be able to charge interest or pay interest out to holders or not. And that's a big sticking point really at the moment in the US regulations as well, we've seen over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the stablecoin owners or holders would be pushing for, well, why don't we get a share of all these massive profits? Why does it go to the company itself? And I think this is a debate that's not ended. It'll continue for a while. What do you think?
Definitely will continue for a while. Yeah, and I think, you know, you've seen with the Genius Bill in the US that it was part of the concessions, I think, from the regulations that said that stablecoin issuers couldn't pay interest out to holders. And I think that was to appease some of the banking sector in the US. But I suspect over time that this might change. I mean, I don't know for sure, but it's inevitable, really. And I think you've seen Coinbase come out last week or the week before, but essentially saying that they're not necessarily going to support some of the further bills in the US because they don't believe that they're really able to compete on a level playing field with the banking sector. So it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out.
Okay, let's talk about stable coins in Africa. This is it's an interesting subject because Africa has really cottoned on to the use case for stable coins. You know, globally, stable coins came from nowhere. 6 years ago, today market cap is north of what, $240 billion or something like that dollars. Some see it going to $2 trillion by 2030. It's just phenomenal. I mean, that would be a 10x increase in the market cap. Nigeria last year did $92 billion in stablecoin and crypto transactions. What is the reason for this?
Yeah, it has grown significantly, and I think it will too. I think it's largely driven from the utility of stablecoins. They move value pretty much instantly anywhere in the world, pretty very low cost, and 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so not constrained necessarily to traditional finance constraints. And I think there's probably two main areas where stablecoins are really growing significantly. So the first would be mainly around business activities. For example, traders are increasingly using stablecoins to move money fast to facilitate trading. Global corporates are using stablecoins to better manage their treasury operations and manage their liquidity so that money is in the geography, in the location that it's needed at the time it's needed. And it helps reduce some of their kind of forecasting risk and delays through the banking sector potentially. Another big use case, and this is especially, I think, relevant to Africa and emerging markets, is where local currencies are depreciating. We're seeing businesses and consumers buying stable coins, notably US dollar stable coins. They are the majority of the stable coins in use globally at the moment and in our markets in Africa. And the reason they do that is because the US dollar is seen as a more stable currency, and therefore their buying power isn't deteriorated by inflation or a depreciation of their local currency. Their spending power remains more stable over time. And that has been a very, very big use case for why stablecoins have grown. And I guess the third area, which is growing more, and probably over the last 2 years, 3 years, is starting to grow more, is stablecoins for payments and remittances, is also growing. I think it's still a relatively small proportion of global payments. But, I mean, a report I saw last week was saying that the payments using stablecoins and crypto is growing more than 50% a year. And I think that's going to continue because the utility is there with stablecoins for sure.
Right. And it does raise the question why issuers such as Tether and Circle supergroup, why would they be prepared to offer, well, not supergroup in this case, but why would they be prepared to offer US dollar pegged stable coins in countries like Zimbabwe or Nigeria, where it's very hard to get your hands on actual US dollars?
I think the simple reason is because that's where the demand is. Whenever there's difficulty accessing physical dollars, US dollar stable coins present a very easy alternative, and they're effectively borderless. Moving that stable coin from one geography and one market to another is as simple as having a digital wallet in each of those markets wherever you want to transfer to. And because of that nature of them being borderless, the liquidity pools are far deeper. So it's easier for movement of dollars. It's not constrained necessarily to the borders of a country in the same way physical dollars could be. I would add, though, that that's also causing a number of central banks and emerging markets and in Africa to flag concerns about US dollar stablecoins and how they could impact the ability of the central banks to really exercise monetary policy controls. And that's something that I think is something that we'll need to keep an eye on as the market continues to grow. I think what will end up happening is you'll see regulators being more active in terms of how they want to see monitoring, regulation and reporting on stablecoin usage so that they can factor that into monetary policy conversations and decisions. So I think that's an area that's going to be an interesting area to watch too over the next year or two.
Right. In the beginning of the conversation, you said that one of the issues that you were keeping a close eye on, in fact, probably participating in as well, is the regulatory debate in South Africa around stablecoins. And I think the area of cross-border payments is one area where there is a lacuna, and that came out in a court case last year, not directly involving cryptocurrency, but by way of liquidation of another company, where Bitcoin was shipped abroad and it was found not to have violated exchange control. Well, the Reserve Bank has appealed that straight away. But this is clearly an area that there's going to have to be some regulation stepping in. Is this an area that you're looking at?
Very much so, yeah. I mean, I think we engage with the regulators, as you'd expect, on a regular basis. We are in conversations with them ongoing about what regulation is coming. They are very actively working on stablecoin regulation and guidance, whether that's RAND-based or dollar-based or other commodity-based. It's not clear to me yet about when those regulations might come out, but I do know they've got teams working on it, and I'm hopeful that we'll start seeing some more meaningful progress, because as a bank, it's important to us. But I will say that almost exclusively, the people that are working in this sector, in this industry, in South Africa especially, have all said that they're very keen to see the regulations come out so it's much clearer on what to do in terms of bringing cross-border payment, capital inflow and outflow into South Africa, how to report on that, what, if any, constraints there are. So I think banks are looking for that clarity. I know industry participants are generally looking for that clarity too. And I know that the Reserve Bank are definitely working on it.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. You've been 3.5 years heading up the digital asset team at Absa. What's your background?
Yeah, almost a lifetime banker. 25 years in banking. You can tell my accent. I'm British. Moved here 20 years ago, and Barclays were taking over or buying an interest in Absa. So I moved here then and pretty much stayed ever since. Spent most of my career in banking, transformational change, technology and operations. And about 3 years ago, was asked to set up this team here for Absa in our corporate investment bank.
Okay, thanks for that. Now, final question, and very quickly, Rob, tell us, what can we expect in the next year or so from Absa in this space in terms of development and new product rollout? I mean, I'm waiting for the day, and I think Discovery Bank has already offers this in partnership with Luno, where you can buy Bitcoin on your app. Is this coming for Absa?
Yeah, I don't know if that will come in the next year. So it's something that we are talking about internally for sure. We're spending time across our business with our markets and our markets team for the trading side, with our retail teams and our colleagues there in terms of how we could enable that and when's the right time to offer that. Our first product that we'll bring out will be for our corporate and business clients, which will be the digital asset custody. We are going to run a number of proof of concepts this year on Obviously, the stablecoin, but also we think we'll do some early moves in terms of the trading side, maybe towards the end of this year. So it's an area we're very focused on, and an area that we really do see as a fundamental, foundational part of the future of financial services.
We're going to leave it there. Thank you so much, Rob Downes, Head of Digital Assets at Absa. Thank you very much for joining us on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.